keep up to date with all things Reading FC. Follow the Tilehurst End on Facebook and Twitter.
This podcast is proudly sponsored by ZCZ Films. Remember, if you want to get involved in sponsoring the show, drop us an email to thetilehurstend@gmail.com.
Hello and welcome to the Tilehurst End podcast, sponsored by ZCZ Films. It is that time of year again. The financial accounts are out for the season 2020-21, not just Reading, but clubs all across the country releasing accounts at this time of year. And as ever, I'm delighted to be joined. My name is Ollie Allen, of course, and I'm delighted to be joined by football finance expert and host of the Price of Football podcast, Kieran Maguire, to go through Reading's accounts from the last financial year. Kieran, how's it going?
It's good. It is reporting season as far as many clubs are concerned. So, it's my birthday as far as I'm concerned, because there's Villa, Leicester, Manchester City, Liverpool, and many Scottish clubs as well. Luton have put theirs out. So, yeah, my wife just disowns me for a few weeks this time. And I just spend all my time on Excel. Apart from, I've got a day job as well and work. You better concentrate on that as well, Kim.
Yeah, because it was your actual birthday last week as well. We were going to record this last week, obviously, when Reading's account came out, but I wasn't going to be too unkind to make you record on your birthday or anything. But yeah, a manic few days, and with Abramovich selling Chelsea as well. I imagine you've barely had any sleep the last week or so.
Yeah. So, I've just turned 60. So, I went away with the family. Kids, grandkids, wife and everybody for a few days up to the lakes. And I spent the whole time working, which didn't go down particularly. But it was, the Abramovich story. And let's be honest, there's far more important things than football present, but there's still an awful lot of attention. Football has a much bigger social and media footprint than it deserves in terms of the size of the industry. But it's there. If we were playing Pointless, the one person you wouldn't want to say is name a Russian oligarch. Well, one person you can guarantee is not going to get you close to zero is going to be Roman Abramovich. And football brings with it attention, notoriety, fame, kudos, however you want to describe it, to an extent that no other industry in this country does. There are far, far bigger industries that take place, but owning a local football club or a well-known national football club will get you the public attention, which is a double-edged sword, as I think people are finding out presently.
Yeah, I will hesitantly say that Reading have come to the fore, I suppose, in national attention the last year or so, particularly with the points deduction last November, which we discussed on this show. And now these accounts, which sort of following a trend the last couple of years, have caught the eye, I think, not just of Reading fans, but of fans across the Football League. I think particularly fans seeing what's happened at Derby the last couple of years, what's people saying that from the outside, that Reading could be the next Derby. I think Reading fans have been we've been saying this for the last couple of years. So let's dive straight into some figures then from these accounts, as I say, that came out about 10 days ago now, I think. Just a broad overview of these figures. So Reading made a pre-tax loss of £35.7 million. That's down from £42 million the previous year. Turnover was down from £17.8 million to £13.8 million. Again, obviously, this financial year does cover most of the pandemic, so we'll speak about the impact of COVID as well. Matchday revenue, as you'd expect, is down from £3.58 million to £0.58 million. Commercial revenue also dropped in line with that from £4.6 million down to £3.3 million. Media revenue actually went up again, partly because of the pandemic, because there was more streaming, obviously fans watching on iFollow. So that went up from £8.2 million to £9.4 million. And the wage bill, thankfully, did come down from £37.6 million to £32.2 million. It is worth mentioning, Kieran, at this point, obviously, this period covers the 1st of July 2020 to the 30th of June 2021. So all of the players that left Reading last summer, Sam Baldock, Johnny Aluko, obviously Richards went to Bayern Munich, and Michael Olise was sold to Crystal Palace. Their wages are still included in this figure. And obviously the £8 million transfer fee that Reading received for Michael Olise is not included. It is mentioned in the accounts under a little heading called after the reporting date. So we are almost always playing catch up with these accounts, Kieran. I think particularly with Reading, where it's a bit difficult to judge because Reading have been cost cutting the last 2-3 years.
You're absolutely right, Ollie. And on the face of it, you summarised all those numbers fantastically. They're quite frightening. In any normal business, you work out what you think you're going to receive as revenue, and you set your budget in terms of what you can afford to pay out accordingly. Reading don't seem to have gone down that particular route, and especially if we take a look at the period since parachute payments ceased, and that was in 2017. The clubs now had 4 years of accounts where, as an outsider, you look at them and say, well, your money coming in has collapsed, and that was pre-COVID. What are you doing to cut cloth accordingly? And there doesn't appear as yet. Now, I think you're right to highlight that it's probably is going to start to kick in 21, 22. And the club didn't appear to be prioritising that. Now, it could be that the club owner is funding, and he certainly is. The amount of money in terms of the borrowings of the club are going up, and there's no indication that he's going to recall that money. But as we have seen outside of football, you're only one owner or one ownership decision away from sustainability becoming much more critical than it has been historically.
As you mentioned, Reading have been losing money at a very, very eye-watering rate for years now. Obviously, then the pandemic kicks in last year, which helped no club at all, but certainly leads to a Reading who, as I say, were losing money anyway. How much of an impact do you sort of estimate that the pandemic had? Because, as I say, obviously match day income rapidly decreased because there were no paying fans. At least I think there were 2 or 3 games where 2,000 fans were in, and obviously commercial income was down as well. But at the same time, that broadcasting revenue went up, and obviously also sort of operating expenses on match days went down because you're not having to operate turnstiles and stuff like that. How much of an impact, sort of, if you could give sort of a broad figure, do you estimate sort of COVID had on Reading's finances?
Well, if we compare Reading to 2019, which is the last season pre-COVID, broadly the club has got around about £5 million a year less at, I would say, on the banks of COVID. Now, some people might argue that perhaps attendances would have fallen a wee bit because the club hasn't had the best of seasons. But most fans sign up on a season ticket basis. The away fans turn up not to see Reading; they turn up to see their teams. And one of the good things about the Championship is that it still has huge fan bases in terms of people who will travel week in, week out to watch their teams. So I think as far as costs are concerned, probably around about £5 million. On the revenue side of things, on the cost side of things, wages haven't been impacted, although the club will have had some savings because they won't be using match day staff to the same extent. So there'll be some of your overheads are going down. That will be compensated by the fact that football costs did rise as a result of having to play matches during the pandemic. And people say, well, how can that be the case? Well, players are being tested twice a week. The clubs have to pay that, though I believe the PFA and has helped with regards to that. But it's simple things. If you've got an away fixture and you're staying overnight, then instead of one coach taking the whole squad. I mean, if you go back to the start of lockdown, we are in a different phase of the pandemic now. What clubs were doing that they were using 2 or 3 coaches because the last thing they wanted was 20 people on a coach to transmit and catch COVID from one person to another. So transport costs went up when you were in the hotels. Players weren't in a twin room; they were in separate rooms, and all of this did have a financial impact. It's the additional sort of protocol costs in terms of sanitizing everything, and the clubs were taking extra effort, and they're always pretty cautious They don't want to lose prize assets such as footballers, but extra attention was being taken with regards to cleanliness and things like that. So, money coming in went down, and money going up in terms of these type of protocols and costs went up. So, 5 million in terms of revenue, probably perhaps another million in terms of costs. It doesn't help. And I think we're in a frightening world where I'm talking about £5 to £6 million as being an irrelevance. But if we take a look at Reading's losses over the last three seasons, they're pretty sizable. So they're £100 million or more, in fact, and that's that doesn't help what's already a bad situation. The EFL owners have agreed on some COVID allowances from the perspective of financial fair play calculations, which will allow clubs to absorb those additional costs and make adjustments for revenue as well.
The loss was, I say, more positive. I'm hesitant to describe a £36 million loss as more positive. Obviously, the limit across 3 years is £39 million and Reading have hit 36 in 1 year. Obviously, it is a decrease from the £42 million the year before, but it is still, I think it's the second biggest loss, I think, only behind Bristol City, I think, out of the clubs that have reported so far in the Championship, I think around £38 million. Why have Reading still made such a big loss? And is it because of those extra COVID costs? Because I say staff numbers have gone down, obviously not players-wise. I think we have decreased the playing squad, but obviously behind the scenes, a lot of staff have been laid off and things like that. Wages have gone down. Other expenses have gone down as well. Why still is that figure still quite eye-watering?
Because Reading are not generating enough money to allow themselves to pay wages, which are based on my calculations, are around about £15,500 a week. Now that has come down. That's what it was £18,000 a week the previous season. You've got players on legacy contracts. A player comes in, signs a 3-year deal, and they've got guaranteed money. And I think this is a legacy problem. You have to wait for players' contracts to expire and then either renegotiate at a lower level or allow the player to move on to elsewhere to find somebody else. And I think it's also a function of being in the Championship. Reading's wage bill is average as far as that division is concerned. You've got clearly some clubs with parachute payments, and Reading themselves were beneficiaries of parachute payments for four seasons. You've got some clubs where the owners are trying to gamble on getting to the Premier League, and the way to do that is to invest in talent. And again, I think that accusation could be directed at Reading. I don't think that's an unfair observation. And if it comes off, then you're a hero. And if it doesn't come off, you've got a problem. And that's where we are. So, Reading's wages are the biggest single cost as far as the club are concerned. The other major cost in respect of players is transfer fee amortization costs. Those have been roughly static for four seasons, but that's in a period where the club has had a reduction in income, but it's got more money going out because of investing in the transfer market itself. And then it's that net cost. Some other clubs in the Championship have been net generators of cash. But if we take a look at Reading's squad, in 2016, the total cost of the squad was just under £12 million. That was nearly £34 million by the time we got to 2020. So the money has been spent. Now, you're a Reading fan. You go to watch them every week. The people listening to this podcast are the Reading fans. They can say how well that money's been spent. I'm just a spreadsheet dude. I can't talk about football.
I could talk as a Reading fan and say that money has been spent incredibly poorly based off the results. The last 4 years, obviously, playoff final 2017, seventh place finish last year, but apart from that, very little to show for it. Apart from a couple of relegation battles, you mentioned those legacy contracts. So obviously, it's worth mentioning again. Obviously, these figures from this, these accounts include Sam Baldock and Johnny Luca, who are both signed on Ron Gourlay deals. So those figures will be off the wages for the next accounts. John Swift is almost certain to leave the club this summer. Obviously, we won't see the impact of his wages coming off the accounts for 2 years, I think it would be, until then. So it is a few years, I think, for these legacy contracts, as Kieran says, to sort of make their way off the accounts, and the figures might look a little bit better after that. But yeah, we mentioned the wages to turnover figure. There's always seems to be brought up with Reading, just because we have, I think we did hold the record for the highest wages to turnover ratio, and we've broken it again this year. £234 spent on wages for every £100 of income. I think if you take out the furlough grant, Kieran, I saw your tweets about it, that obviously, do you really want to count furlough as income? That figure is obviously even higher. Obviously, wages have gone down, but also turnover has gone down. And you mentioned it there, Kieran, that the Reading's probably biggest problem is getting money in from player sales. It's been Reading's problem for 5 or 6 years now that they are not selling players well at all. Obviously, we've seen Michael Olise last summer, again, mentioned in the accounts for after the reporting there, that should help. I think it was £0.7 million profit on player sales, including add-ons, last year. And you look at, again, Brentford's always the example that's brought up, but there are several other Championship clubs that have a business model where they accept they are going to have to sell players. They, well, A, first and foremost, recruit very well and scout very well to be able to get players in who have that value to be able to be sold. But also then they are willing to sell those players for profit. Reading are probably one of the worst teams at doing that, I would say.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Ollie. I mean, if we take a look at the last 5 years, I'm always a bit reluctant to look at one season, because one season can be very volatile. Over the course of the last five seasons, so this is until the end of 2020-21, so before the Michael Olise sale, player sales were £17.6 million. So we're averaging £3.5 million a year. That's less than Adam Webster, who's, you know, one. And then if you look at Brentford, you know, they've sold every year, and that allowed them to reinvest into the squad. So, is this indicative of a poor buying policy? Because if you buy poorly, then you can't sell at a profit. Again, you're the people enjoying or suffering what's happening on the pitch, I think that's, from what you're saying, you don't seem to think that's been a particularly successful recruitment drive. As a Brighton fan, Sam Baldock is one of the great enigmas, I think, of EFL football, because the year that we were promoted at Brighton, he was just fantastic. He ran and he provided so many distractions, which allowed Glenn Murray to score 20 goals and get us promoted. And Sam certainly chipped in, but he wasn't a prolific goal scorer, but he was a really good team player for the Brighton. But you know with Sam Baldock, the chances of getting 46 games a season out of him are about the same as me marrying Miss World at my age.
Well, I mean, I think he's doing very well at Oxford now as well, Sam Baldock, and Sonny Luca, by all accounts, had a very good game for Ipswich last night. I saw a lot of Ipswich fans raving on social media about him. So it swings around the bus. Obviously, it is the division beneath Reading. But yeah, certainly, I think it's almost old ground now to say that the Reading's policy of buying and selling players has just been awful. And that, I suppose, to a certain extent, comes down to the owner's stubbornness. That we've seen, I think Liam Moore is the prime example, where a bid from Brighton, Kieran, your club was rejected. Yep. I think 2018 now. I think it was about £10 million. Obviously, the owner refused to sell, handed Liam Moore a bumper new contract, and we're here 4 years down the line. Dai Young's now fallen out with Liam Moore, shipped him out on loan to Stoke City, and we'll probably never see him play for the club again. And probably get, I would say, at the very most, a fifth of that £10 million bid that the Brighton got for him. So that in itself is indicative of where Reading have been the last few years. One thing I did want to mention, Kieran, one thing that caught several people's eyes on social media was this director's remuneration fee, which rose from £582,000 in 2020 to £744,000 in 2021. Reading's highest paid director in 2021 earned £530,000 or just over. I mean, that's a lot, right? I mean, compared to the rest of the Championship, that is a lot for what's happened on the pitch and off the pitch, it doesn't really seem warranted.
There's only one person that can say whether it's warranted or not, and that's the club owner. Ultimately, it's the owner who agrees the fee and the benefits and everything that goes with it. We do see some clubs on substantially less. There's some clubs that are paying executives a seven-figure fee. So trying to work out what a benchmark number is, especially in the Championship, is challenging. Although what I would say, and this isn't a criticism of either the players or the executives, I think football is the only industry that I'm aware of where the people on the shop floor are earning more money than the people in the boardroom. £531,000 for the highest paid director is very good. For you or I, I'd be absolutely made up. But the average player salary is in the region of probably about 780,000, looking at these numbers. So, it will attract attention because you as fans hold the board to account for what happens on the pitch and off the pitch. And if the fans are unhappy, they will look at these numbers and say, well, we don't think we don't think we're getting a £531,000 return on our investment, which is financial and emotional. And I think that's one thing which doesn't, certainly doesn't get caught by my spreadsheets, but it's that lifelong love affair where we hold boards to account. Because if I go and buy a new set of headphones and they're a bit rubbish, I don't go to the club accounts, or I don't go to the company accounts of Sennheiser and say, God, you've seen how much the executives are being paid, and they sell me a pair of Bobbin's headphones. So for football, it's this unique, crazy world. We would not be having this conversation with regards to any other aspect of our lives apart from football, because we interact with companies on a daily basis on a variety of levels, but football is this unique, crazy love affair that we have.
Yeah, I was looking at that figure sort of compared to other Championship clubs, and in fairness, whilst it is, incredibly high to us mere mortals, it does seem to be sort of in line with a lot of other clubs. Sadly, as you say, that's just the way that football goes, and probably Reading's for Reading to decrease their wages and their losses, it's going to come from player wages rather than this director's remuneration. We haven't actually really mentioned Dai Young, the owner, just obviously he's the man in control of all this money, essentially. And he's been a figure of sort of division, I think, over the last year or so, 6 months, particularly since this points deduction has come in, where obviously he is the man who is running the ship. He's the man ultimately whose decisions and his behaviour have led to this 6-point deduction and have led to these eye-watering losses. But ultimately, Kieran, he is also the man keeping the club afloat, because he's invested an awful lot of money into the club. I think the majority of the club's cash comes from sort of owner loans and owner financing. And also the club has borrowings of about £100 million that would also be, I think, around £130 million if Dai Young hadn't converted £30 million of that debt into shares. So it is a tricky one, because you can see where fans' complaints come from because of what's happened off the pitch and stuff like that. But ultimately, we are also incredibly reliant on him keeping the club going.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Ollie. And that's both a good thing and a bad thing. It's a good thing that you have got a sugar daddy owner. I don't think that's the appropriate way to describe people who buy football clubs who don't have any sort of logical connection with the club. What happens if his personal circumstances change? What happens if he gets bored? We've seen that at other clubs. Villa with Tony G, Derby with Mel Morris. Villa nearly went out of business, full stop. Derby, Mel Morris decided he I don't know. Nobody knows whether he'd lost interest or he'd lost. I think he's still a very wealthy man. So, you've got Dai Young, who is continuing to fund the club, and his the total borrowings of Reading are £101 million, which is a phenomenal amount of money. And you'd have to ask yourself, without that £101 million, where would Reading Football Club be as far as the football pyramid is concerned? being in the wrong end of the championship is no fun, but it could be worse.
Well, indeed, and I think obviously relegation is a threat this season, as we've seen, and we'll sort of move on to that in a little bit. But I just sort of wanted to get your views on sort of Reading going forward, and obviously the club's auditors have noted a material uncertainty. It's all this fatty language in the reports and stuff like that, which I think casts significant doubt on the club's ability to continue as a going concern. What's your sort of view on Reading going forward, Kieran?
What the auditors are effectively saying is that the club cannot survive on its own two feet. It's reliant upon funding from the owner. And yes, he's made positive noises, but that's you know, as we see, your one illness, your one decision, your one change of circumstances away from having huge problems, because the club does not have the resources to survive making losses of £30 million a year. That's always my reservation with clubs in the Championship. You've got people such as the owners of Bristol City, and I think they're quite a good benchmark for Reading to look at, where the owner, again, has put an awful lot of money in. But could the club survive without them? No, they can't. And therefore, it's fingers crossed, hoping and praying that you might fall out with the owner in terms of the decisions they make, but without the financial contribution, we're looking at a completely different beast and vehicle.
Yeah, I think it's going to be the eternal debate for as long as Dai Young is at Reading Football Club, whether he's been good or bad for the club, because ultimately, yes, he is keeping the club afloat, but there have been decisions and the people he reportedly takes advice from. I think you have to say that there are question marks over that. We have to say, I think the biggest concern is always going to be whether Dai Young gets bored. He clearly wants to get Premier League football. He's never stated it. Well, he's never even done an interview, but you stated it in the money that you spent. And clearly he wants to get to the Premier League, but the further and further Reading get away from that, you have to worry, and particularly if Reading do drop into League One next season. Combine that with the general sort of mood in China, where big billionaires are moving away from owning football clubs, and you have to look at that with a little bit of doubt going forward, I would say. We will move on now to one thing that has emerged over the last week or so. So we were going to record this last week. So fortunately, we are recording this now, and this has popped up. And this is Barnsley's reported letter to the EFL. And this was reported by the Athletic on Monday. Barnsley wrote to the EFL sort of for more clarity on Reading's agreed business plan. Obviously, it came about following their points deduction last November. Essentially, Barnsley saying that the Reading are cheating and they're not following their agreed business plan. According to the Athletic, Barnsley have said that we believe Reading are at a sporting advantage in the 2021-22 season by continuing to operate a business model that is incompatible with profitability and sustainability compliance. Barnsley are at a competitive disadvantage now. We therefore find it objectionable that a breach is occurring now would not be sanctioned until 2023. We are keen to avoid a similar situation to that which Wycombe Wanderers find themselves in, whereby we are forced to take legal action and if sanctions are applied in a non-coterminous period where the continuous and sustained breach of regulations occurred. Lots of big words in there. But obviously, referencing Wycombe Wanderers and their claim to Derby County. Obviously, Wycombe saying that they should have survived last season because Derby broke the financial rules that come in with a points deduction this season. Kieran, do Barnsley have grounds for a complaint here, or are they trying to save their skins from relegation? Because on the basis of it, their complaint comes from the supposed that Reading aren't complying with this agreed business plan that was agreed following the points deduction in November, that sort of, amongst other things, I think the main one was sort of the salary costs, that Reading could sort of spend no more than £21 million on salaries this season, reducing to £16 million next season. I presume Barnsley has sort of seen Reading's accounts come out over the last couple of weeks. They've seen, I suppose, the three signings in January, Carl Hine, Tom Ince and Brandon Barker. Obviously, Ince and Hine both on loans, Brandon Barker on a short-term deal till the end of the season. Reading obviously did also cut their costs in January. Obviously, we saw Rafael Cabral well, his contract was terminated. George Puskas went out to Pisa, and Liam Moore went out to Stoke. And obviously, three of those players are three of Reading's highest earners. As I say, do Barnsley have grounds for a complaint, or are they trying to save their skin?
Barnsley Football Club are going to do what's best for Barnsley Football Club, and that's perfectly understandable. Clearly the lawyers have prepared that letter, and they're being paid by the syllable, judging from the terminology used. I can't say too much, but I'll go as far as to say is that my understanding from people I talk to is that Reading are within the limit and they've got a bit of headroom, so that they have taken efforts to reduce the wage bill, and on the back of that they will believe that they are within the limits now. So what we're getting from Barnsley is conjecture. They might feel that they've seen something. They might feel that on the basis of these results that they've done their own sums. You know, if you want to find out players' wages, you get that there are always people to talk to within the industry. Football is a very, very leaky industry. They might have done their back of an envelope calculations, saying, "Well, yeah, we don't see how the wages bill could have got down to this 21 million for this season, and therefore, on the back of that, we feel that the suspended punishment should be activated." Only time will tell with regards to that. I think the EFL come in for a lot of criticism. Some of it perhaps is warranted. Some of it perhaps isn't. You know, they are doing what they can. They are especially under Trevor Birch, who, you know, people not familiar with Trevor, he's been involved at Chelsea and Swansea and Portsmouth. You know, he's had a lot of experience of working with clubs, and he was at Spurs before he came to the EFL. His background is in corporate insolvency and in football insolvency. He's a lot of experience of that. He knows how to understand the set of numbers. Now, it's not his job to be looking at Reading's necessarily on a day-to-day basis. But I would imagine, and I'll hold my hands on the table. I speak to Trevor on occasion, and I've always found him to be incredibly professional. So I don't think he would risk his reputation by not ensuring that the business plan is not being adhered to, and doing nothing on the back of that.
Yeah, I mean, it certainly seems as if the EFL have sort of opened this can of worms from this whole Derby and Wickham sort of scenario, and Barnsley have, I suppose, sort of latched onto that. And I think it is worth mentioning that, you know, I don't think any Reading fan or sort of anyone at Reading is claiming that Reading have been, you know, whiter than white the last few years. But I think if Barnsley's claim sort of comes down to the fact that they believe Reading are sort of not adhering to this business plan, that to me, and from what you're saying, Kieran, seems a little bit, perhaps a bit dodgy, but we'll see where that goes. And I'd imagine if it's anything like this Wickham Middlesbrough Derby thing, it might run and run and run. So certainly it's added some extra spice to the Reading Barnsley game at the start of April, at least. To end, I suppose, on a slightly negative note, if, say, for example, Barnsley do follow through with this claim, and they are successful, and Reading do get docked these extra 6 points, they do go down to League One, or even if they do go down to League One without sort of suffering this extra points deduction, how sort of catastrophic would relegation be for the football club? Because I think, obviously, given the way the season has gone, there's been people talking about, would it be a chance for the club to reset? Would the club even survive in the third tier? Given these numbers and sort of what you know, Ken, how would Reading sort of survive in League One?
Well, I think the biggest hit is in respect of broadcast income, because under EFL rules, 80% of broadcast income goes to clubs in the Championship and just 12% in League One. So you're going to get around about a sixth of the money. So it's going to drop from, you know, 7.5-8 million to around about 1.5. So that's going to be a big gap to plug. There will be crowds returning. The Reading will have the benefit of a full season of attendances, which will help to plug that gap to an extent, but not all of it. So I would be anticipating total revenues in the Championship, 10 to 12 million, and presently, Reading have got a wage bill of 32, to. Now, we know that they are trying to get that down to 21 and then to 16. Even if they get it down to 16 next season, you've got income of £10 million. So you've already lost, you're already at a significant loss before you've got your day-to-day running costs. So once again, the club would be having to go to the owner to say, we can't operate as a day-to-day business. How much are you prepared to dig us out? And there you've got to keep the fingers crossed, because I suspect it wasn't part of his plan to be trying to get out of League One. And League One, not a walk in the park. You know, just ask Sunderland, Ipswich, you know, and other clubs who have gone down there. You know, Portsmouth thought that, you know, when Michael Eisner acquired the club, that they'd be shooting through the divisions, and Portsmouth got a big fan base. Yeah, and there are big clubs in League One. Sheffield Wednesday, again I think they probably hoped that they were going to return, you know, in top two, but it's all of a sudden you're a bigger fish in a smaller pond, and when you come to town, the likes of Accrington and so on, they want to show you that don't think that you can you just waltz your way straight out of League One, because it won't be as easy as people anticipate.
Yeah, and there are a lot of worrying comparisons, I think, between Reading and Sheffield Wednesday. At least of all, they lost playoff finals in consecutive seasons, and then you've got all the stuff around wages and obviously points deductions, advisors to owners lingering in the background. So, hopefully Reading do not sort of follow through completely in that comparison. As I say, a lot of this is sort of guesswork, estimation work, because we are almost playing catch up with these accounts, because these are numbers that ended in June last year, and we hope and we believe that the numbers will have gone down over the last over this current financial year, purely because crowds are returning, wages are continuing to go down, and Reading obviously have been under a transfer embargo the last 18 months or so, so they haven't spent any money on bringing players in. So we do hope that those numbers will have gone down, but that will be a topic for this time next year, Kieran. So hopefully the numbers will look slightly better, and hopefully Reading will still be a championship club. But for now, Kieran, thank you very much for joining me as always this year.
Thanks very much, Ollie, and good luck for the rest of the season.
Thank you very much. And indeed, of course, to you at home for listening as well. Always a really, really insightful discussion, this sort of getting a full breakdown of Reading's financial accounts. So hopefully you have enjoyed. Reading, of course, travel to Nottingham Forest on Saturday afternoon before heading to Bournemouth next Tuesday. So a big week ahead for the Royals. And Mark, or possibly somebody else, possibly even me, will be back to host the main show either Sunday or Monday after the Forest game, and look ahead to the Bournemouth game. But until then, come on, you arts.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you arts.
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.